Today, we hear how some patients seem to be taking months to fully recover from COVID-19.
I look at the cabinet to the right of my bed and it's stuffed with pills and multivitamins. And until really very recently, I was taking omeprazole. Basically, it reduces the amount of acid in your stomach because the most sort of lingering COVID symptom I had was stomach pain.
Luke Harding is a senior international correspondent at The Guardian. But lately, he's found himself covering something a little closer to home, his own health.
I sleep propped up under a whole heap of books. I think I'm currently lying on Crime and Punishment by Fyodor Dostoevsky and other fat volumes because that reduces the acid reflux at night, which is a particular problem. But I'm trying to take no drugs at all, having popped literally hundreds of pills. I've been taking them since I got suspected COVID-19 in mid-March.
Now it's August and Luke is finally starting to feel a little bit better.
I think almost half a year on pills is long enough, and I want to kind of wean my body off medication if I can.
In the many months that he's been sick, Luke has been in touch with dozens of people whose coronavirus symptoms have dragged on and on too, many of them doctors. They're calling it long-tail COVID, and they wish it were better understood. From The Guardian, I'm Michaeli Rau. Today in Focus, why do some patients seem to take so long to recover from COVID-19? Luke, do you remember the day that you got sick? What were your first symptoms?
It was as if someone had turned on an evil light switch. It all happened crashingly together. I was cycling in town. My wife and son was about to get back from Oxford from university. So I was going food shopping and I was suddenly struck with this just appalling, splitting headache. And at the same time, to my horror, I found myself coughing. And I thought, oh, look, it can't be, can it? But I think it was.
Where do you think you got it?
Well, I live outside London. I live in a mid-sized town in Hertfordshire. And for most of my kind of professional life, when I haven't been abroad as a foreign correspondent, I've been commuting into The Guardian's main office in King's Cross in London. So that's a journey of about an hour. And the week prior to my coughing and the onset of what I think was COVID, everybody was coughing. The whole of London was coughing. I mean, much of the UK was coughing. And I remember thinking at the time, this is not good. And I think we can say that we were the Boris Johnson herd immunity cohort.
I must level with you, level with the British public. Many more families are going to lose loved ones before their time.
In other words, people who contracted this before lockdown and have been suffering to some degree ever since.
So the evil light switch was turned on. You started coughing. You got a headache. And then over the course of the next week or two, what were you experiencing?
Well, I had the sort of naive view that I'm middle-aged, but I'm relatively fit. I mean, not sort of super fit, but, you know, I cycle and I jog a bit. And I thought with my sort of innate optimism that I would throw this thing off, that it was not terribly serious. And actually, to begin with, it was okay. There was fatigue, there was headache, there was coughing. And then around about week two, I would say day 8, 9, 10, things got pretty ominous. And it's only now we know that kind of week two is the crunch point in your kind of COVID fate. You can go two ways. You can go much worse quite quickly and be hospitalized, ventilated and so on. Or you can go the other way, which is nonetheless a pretty unpleasant and in my case, long road. And so I found myself short of breath. I had chest pains. I just felt absolutely terrible. And on day 11, things got so bad, I took advice from my GP and he said, look, I think you better get to hospital and get yourself checked out because I can hear that your breathing is not good. So I phoned for an ambulance. I was told there would be a 6-hour wait. And then in the end, I got a lift to the local hospital where they just set up a kind of new COVID pod. Went in there, sat down, And essentially the doctors were very friendly, but they established pretty quickly I didn't have pneumonia. And I got the impression they were slightly terrified, to be honest. This is kind of early days. They were just really fearful about who and what was coming through the door. And as soon as they realized they didn't have pneumonia, I was booted out. And I remember phoning my wife. I mean, I felt elated that I'd packed a hospital bag, but I clearly didn't need it. But at the same time, I still felt really ill. And this is a strange mismatch with COVID, is that you look okay, you sound okay, you feel awful. And very often, not so much in my case, but in other people's cases, your signs, your lung function is terrible, really bad.
So when did you start to think, I should be getting better now, what's going on?
Yeah, well, I think we've all been on a learning curve, by which I mean people who've suffered from COVID or their relatives, but also the medical profession, because I had a very good GP and he was basically saying around day 30, well, you should actually be getting better by now. And I was saying, well, look, I feel really terrible. And I'd have a day or two where I felt slightly brighter. Then I would do something stupid, like going for a cycle ride, and then I would crash again. And what's interesting, and I joined a whole load of kind of COVID support groups, is that other people were reporting the same symptoms. They would do mild or moderate exercise, and then afterwards they would plunge.
At what point did you find those COVID support groups and realize that you weren't the only person going through this?
About week 3 or 4. And it was a little bit perverse. I remember I phoned my GP again on day 45 saying, look, I'm still ill. I tried to go for my state mandated constitutional walk of 15 minutes around the block. And I got kind of beyond the garden and a bit further. And then I gave up because I just felt so awful. What's going on? I actually took a COVID test. I've done two, but I did one on April the 22nd, 6 weeks on. It was not very reliable. The GP who gave it to me said, look, these don't always work. And I came out as negative. And this is another aspect of which kind of adversely affects your psychology, is that a lot of people, just anecdotally, who post on these forums have clearly had COVID in some form, but have been negative on the test. And it's strange. You're in an indeterminate place where you know you're ill, but the medical community doesn't fully recognize that you are ill. And by this point, we're probably talking about late April, it was pretty clear that as well as the kind of medical emergency of huge numbers of people dying in hospital and needing critical care and the great tragedy that went with that, there are all sorts of people still struggling in the community. And when I talked to the local surgery, they said, yeah, look, we've just had a doctor who also fell out with COVID and he's just come back after 6 or 7 weeks off. And I interviewed Paul Garner, a professor of tropical medicine at Liverpool University, who'd written this gruesome but fascinating blog about his symptoms, which were just off the wall.
Very, very severe headache. Feeling cold. It would give me eye pain. Pain in my fingers and my hands. It would make my ears ring. It would make me deaf. Pains in my calf. A cough. Once in the middle of the night, it made my heart race. Twitching in the muscles in my leg. Difficulty speaking. I described it like an advent calendar. Every day you open up the calendar before Christmas and you have a new symptom. And even
I feel a bit guilty to say this, but I felt euphoric that there was someone else there who not only had long haul COVID, but was having a worse time than I was.
I was angry that the information out in the general public indicated it was a relatively short illness. It could be serious, but it was relatively short. And there was me at day 30, still feeling really unwell. It needed to get out there. So I just wrote down what was happening to me and sent it into the British Medical Journal as a communication about this is what happens or can happen. I didn't even know whether there were other people out there. My felt experience was totally real and it needed communicating.
I called him and interviewed him for The Guardian, and that piece clocked up more than 1 million views. Suddenly he was being bombarded with thousands of messages from other people saying, you know, Paul, tell us the answer.
A lot of people came to me and just said, thank goodness, you've described exactly what's happening in my living hell for this last 6 weeks. They were saying that these symptoms were being denied by the doctors, or that the people were anxious, or that there was that it couldn't possibly be COVID. So some of them were taking the BMJ blog into the doctor's surgery, which was a relief. But it is quite a lonely experience. And so to hear that other people are going through this and that this is recognized, that there's not something wrong with you, that you're not mentally ill, that you're not somehow abnormal, it just helps to share things.
There's a huge group of us, of people who have COVID, who are not dead, but who feel ill and cannot resume normal life, normal professional existence, normal love, normal family relationship, and whose sort of year, 2020, has been shot through by anxiety and ill health. So when I started reading these online forums, it became pretty clear that my weirdo symptoms were the same as other people's strange and perplexing symptoms. And I thought at the time it was like falling into a medieval wall painting or something by Bosch or Bruegel, a triptych that you used to see in the good old days when you could go around a museum where humans in a state of darkness and disarray are being jabbed by demons with beaks and strange appendages and half mice, you know, half person wielding a whip. It is downright strange and manifests in so many different ways. You look at these groups, I was just looking at it this morning, the Slack group for COVID, and there are gastro groups, there are lung groups, obviously the head groups, it seems to affect every single organ of the body.
Coming up, one of the online support groups for people who believe they have long tail COVID is made up entirely of doctors. We hear from one who's still sick. Yulia Hammond is a 39-year-old junior doctor in Manchester. Just a few months ago, she had a busy life, working long days at the hospital, going for walks in the Peak District with her family, and chasing a new puppy. She says she's fairly certain she knows when she got sick, in mid-March when she was at work. She didn't have any PPE at the time and saw a series of patients who were coughing. Then, on March 19th, the day of her daughter's 7th birthday, Yulia fell sick. For 2 weeks, she was in bed with typical COVID-19 symptoms, a cough, a fever, chest pain. But 5 months later, she still hasn't felt well enough to return to work.
At the moment, the things that remain are the shortness of breath with what I've seen described by others as a python grip, which feels like there's a band around my rib cage, my lower rib cage, which doesn't allow me to expand my chest as well as I should. This has been described by multiple sclerosis patients as the MS hug. There's a neurological component as well. So I've had a headache now for 138 days with some blurred vision, maybe to do with the vagus nerve.
It's interesting to hear you talk about your symptoms in such clinical terms. And it makes me think, obviously, you're approaching this both as a person who's sick and as a medical professional. And I was wondering, you know, as a doctor, a big part of your job is to be around people who are unwell, to think about illness in terms of what can be diagnosed, what can be tested. How does all of that shape your own thinking about your own health?
So I have a background in epidemiology and clinical research, and also obviously, I'm a clinician. So in some ways, it's this odd dichotomy, really, because doctors make the worst patients, I think. But also, I think if I hadn't been so ill, I would have found it completely fascinating. So the thing that has been amazing for me, really, is to have come across a community of other clinicians going through the same thing. And what really helped me, I think, to think about it from a more clinical perspective rather than just a patient sort of undergoing these horrifying symptoms and reading about them in real time is when I read Professor Paul Garner's blog in the BMJ. And so I got in touch with him, and actually really his kindness and his constant support that he's given us as clinicians, really, to say, you know, I'm undergoing this and I know it sounds mad and everybody probably thinks we're mad, but it is real. Your symptoms are real, has been amazing. And so I think, you know, it's just made me be able to step back, I think, in a way that I probably wouldn't have been able to if I was just slogging through it totally alone.
At the point where you got in touch with Dr. Garner, had you been able to get tested by then?
So I begged for tests, really, for the first few weeks. They just were not available. So by the time I was able to get a test, I think I was day 47 and 56 or something like that. I got two tests and they were negative.
But that still would be like more than a month after this was declared a global pandemic. You're a healthcare worker. You think you have this illness.
Yes. I'm not really sure quite what was happening at that point. I think we were just really low on the ground on tests and everything was going into the acute patients that were coming into the hospital. And I haven't had the antibody test either, although I think it's now being offered to all healthcare workers. Again, I'm not at work.
Has this taken a toll on your mental health too? Not being able to work, not being able to be there for your family in the way that I imagine you'd like?
Absolutely. There are two things happening here, I think. So one of them, and this has been quite well documented by a lot of people, is lots of the medical community are talking about sort of anxiety and depression. Chronic illness and depression, there's a cycle to those illnesses. So the more and the longer that you're ill, the less you're able to do, the more likely you are to fall into a depression. The other element of all of this, and I think this has been quite well documented as well, is there seems to be quite a significant neurological aspect to this virus. So one of the things, and I think Prof. Garner mentioned this, I've heard other people mention this, we both had periods where we would just weep. So I had kind of two consecutive weekends where I could not stop crying. And I think maybe we'll find that there's an element of, you know, maybe the sort of anxiety and depression, maybe potentially are part of the illness as well. You know, it's a physiological thing rather than just a psychological thing. But I think it's early days for that. And I wouldn't want to make any blanket statements about those things, but I definitely think there's an element of an emotional lability.
It sounds like trying to understand your own symptoms has kind of given you something to focus on. But what's been the most frustrating part of all of this for you?
Really, my identity as a doctor has been really called into question. So I think for most of us, medicine is a vocation and it consumes, you know, so much of who we are. And in my darkest days, you know, I wonder, will I ever work as a doctor again? But I think probably having that clinical background helps me to have a bit of detachment as well, because I know that there are people suffering from horrible things for years and years and years. You know, I just keep thinking, you know, just get through this day. Let's get through this day. I think my work has been the hardest thing because I'm with my family, you know, and in a way I've spent more time with my family now than really I have since starting medicine. But, you know, I don't know really in the end how things are going to work out. I don't know if, you know, I have permanent damage to my lungs. I don't know. I don't know what's really causing the symptoms and what the trajectory of the illness will be. So I think the unknown of the impact on my working life has really been the most difficult thing for me.
Luke, we heard from Yulia there, who as a doctor is really quite clinical in describing her own journey through this illness. But it's also been really incredibly frustrating for her as a doctor to not have all the answers. How far do you think we are from really understanding the effects of this virus?
I think this is a learning experience for everybody, for patients, for health professionals, for politicians, health bureaucrats. Careers will be made from this. Nobel Prizes will be awarded to whoever gets the first proper global vaccine. PhDs will be being written about this in 10, 15 years' time. Social historians and cultural anthropologists will be writing great works about the pandemic of 2019, 2020 and how it reshaped geopolitics, international relations, the fight against poverty, power, and so on. All that is great if you can stand back and take the kind of big view. But for most of this year, I've just been thinking, God, what I wouldn't give to feel totally well again.
I mean, and to that point, it's a learning curve for journalists too, isn't it? I mean, we spoke to our colleague Sarah Bosley, The Guardian's health editor, about this a little bit. She's looked into it, and she says one thing that makes it really tricky to report on is this fact we've talked about, that so many people who think they have long-tail COVID either never got a test because they weren't available or they didn't test positive. You know, if you don't get a test, then you can't say for sure that these symptoms are coronavirus related. I mean, that is a bit of a difficult area with this, right?
it is a bit of a difficult area, but certainly the GPs I spoke to, none of them said, there's no proof that you've had COVID. I'm not going to deal with you. They all understand that the sort of testing and diagnostic mechanism for COVID, especially in the early months, has been a mess. I've got no doubt that I've had it. I mean, how else would one explain both the symptoms and the fact this has just gone on so damn long?
I think there are still some people who think, you know what, I'll take my chances. I'm pretty healthy. I'm probably not going to die of COVID-19. You know, if I get it, I get it. What do you say to that?
I say that they're deluding themselves, and it's in everybody's interests that you take precautions. And I would just say, without being too hectoring, you really don't want to get this. Even if you are young, fit, and you think you're Superman or Superwoman, it's an absolutely unpleasant experience, even if you get it mildly. And if I were to go back to tell myself on sort of COVID day 5, hey, look, Luke, you're going to be ill for 5 or 6 months, I would have been horrified. I just assumed from reading all of the kind of government adverts that I would be ill for a maximum of 2 weeks. If you get it in mild form, you're lucky. But the thing to do is to not get it and to not spread it to anyone else.
Luke, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Luke Harding, a senior international correspondent at The Guardian. You can read his interviews with Paul Garner, Yulia Hammond, and other long-tail COVID patients at theguardian.com. My thanks to Luke, Yulia, and Paul. This episode was produced by Sam Colbert. Sound design by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. As always, thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.